Irvin takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the west side. No good. But she's going to get on a rebound. Kicks it out. Katie Sykes for three.
Got it.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Friends, enemies, and anyone in between, welcome back to WZND's Red Zone. Finally back at 6 o'clock here on the pulse of Redbird Nation. We are officially back to normal. It's great. We're like 3 weeks back from spring break, and we're finally doing our first real Red Zone of the semester, but it's great. We're back in triple threat formation. I'm Leo Stauderher, your sports director here.
There you are.
I am. Yeah. That's a real title, not one of the fake ones I make up. But
yeah, you do make a couple.
I'm your sports director here at WZND and host of the Red Zone, our co-host, back from his sabbatical in Iowa City. It's Joey Dwyer, WZND's production director and the voice of the Quad City Storm.
And gentlemen, let me say, it's so good for the three of us to be back in this room together. It smells like man. It smells like man in here.
I can't say and it smells good, but it smells like the Red Zone.
It does smell like the Red Zone.
Past couple shows, there's either probably like two of us in here, or we had spring break. So it's been a weird couple of weeks, but we're finally all here together, boys.
And the final voice you just heard is the third member of the Big Three. Last but not least, Mr. Joe Kennedy here of WZND, of TV10, of the Naperville Trolley Company.
Oh, yeah.
And that's about it. But
yeah,
it is great to finally be back here with the three of you guys, because we've had a few fill-in hosts in the past, and they were good. But it wasn't the same. We've had a good mix, nationally award-winning mix here. We've had a lot of shows together, and it's great because we only have a few left before we all graduate. So we have to definitely take advantage of these before we bring in the new cast, because I don't know. Who knows if Mikey Fernelli can assemble the right crew? I don't know.
We're going to start to think about it soon, because next week is when we start to get to really realize who's going to be taking over our spots next year, as we're going to be looking through all these candidates. So,
and I don't know.
Fun week next week.
Is there a Joe Kennedy in the mix? I don't
probably
know.
Probably not. Is there a Joey Dwyer? Definitely.
And that's for the better.
Yeah, no, yeah. I was going to say, Joey Dwyer's don't grow on trees, but for a very good reason. Yeah. It's an unsustainable crop.
That's facts. It would be a cool tree, though. But moving into sports here, because I think that's what you came here for if you're listening to the show. We're coming back, as you heard, Joey and I, from a weekend or a couple of days in Iowa City, seeing the Illinois State women's basketball team play in the NCAA tournament. It was the first time they'd done so since 2008. We were the crew that was there in Moline when they won the conference tournament. So to get to go there, to see them play in Iowa City was really one of the coolest things I think I've had the pleasure of doing in my time here at ZND.
Yeah, it was an incredible experience. And just to kind of understand how that trip was to the NCAA tournament. Not like for us, it was cool, you know, because as student media, it was a cool thing to do. We get to say that we went to the NCAA tournament. I have my press badge that says March Madness. Like, that's sick. But to get to experience it through the players' eyes as well, and getting to talk to the players and Coach Gillespie before the game actually happened, we got to talk to them after the game. It was just such a cool experience to see them really kind of cherishing that moment. And for everybody who was involved in that trip for ISU women's basketball, just everybody did an incredible job, and it was such a cool experience.
I think one of the coolest parts, talking about seeing it through the players' eyes, we went down there on Thursday. The game was Friday. There was a pregame, like, kind of media day for it. So we got to hear from a couple of players, a couple of the coaches. Then the players had practice, and then we walked down the tunnel, because we were right after, got to watch a little bit of their practice. Seeing the players walk out the tunnel and then just look out at the big Carver Hawkeye Arena, that was really cool. Kind of seeing them go from playing in these maybe smaller mid-major gyms and then step out to see a Big Ten gym. It was just one of the coolest. It was like right out of Hoosiers. It was awesome.
And like a big thing through the players' eyes is, like, from my time remembering back to freshman year, I don't think they ever played like a top 15 caliber team. And now they're going against the best player probably in the league, and then they're going against Iowa. who had at the time, I mean, they did lose the Creighton in the second round or whatever, but at the time, that fan base, that atmosphere there was insane. And you're also playing up against, they're going to be telling their kids or whatever, yeah, I played against Caitlin Clark. Like, you don't get to say that a lot.
Yeah, and what you mentioned Creighton, I got to give Creighton Radio a big shout out because they did not show up to their seats on press row. So it meant that we could fit Eric Schweizer down on press row next to us as our third man on the call, which was awesome. But you're absolutely right, Joe. For them to be able to play that in that game, and not only play in that game, for the first 10 minutes, for the first quarter, they were more than competitive. Yeah. They jumped out to a lead and were able to hold on to it for a good chunk of the first quarter. And Mary Crompton, on her homecoming, she was draining threes like nobody's business. And obviously, there was a little bit of a skill gap between Iowa and ISU. Yeah. But at the same time, you have to look at the programs relatively, like Iowa has so much more money to spend. They have this established head coach and an established program, whereas Coach Gillespie is just starting to rebuild this women's basketball program here that has not had a lot of successes of late. But she just signed this extension through the 2026-2027 season. Very, very well deserved. And not only for what she does on the court with her players, being able to recruit, but also just the kind of person she is off the court. She is one of the kindest coaches here at ISU, and I think she just embodies what it means to be a Redbird.
And talking about Coach Gillespie sticking around for five more years, she talked about a lot in her press conference, was that this team's going to come back even hungrier next year, that they got a taste of it, that they're really only losing a couple players. Granted, a key player in Juju Redmond, but a lot of these younger players that got a taste of the NCAA tournament, they're going to want to be back. And this is something where you can show to recruits, you can show to your players, this is what we're capable of. This is the end goal, that it's actually obtainable. I think that's going to be huge in just setting the foundation, building upon the foundation she already set here, and taking Redbird basketball to new heights, because they could be up there with Missouri State, with Drake, where you're a contender every year. There's no reason for the Redbirds not to be there.
The one thing I'm worried about is, so we saw something happen like this just a couple months ago with Leah Johnson getting a new contract and then leaving, and Coach Gillespie gets a lot of praise across the country from coaches everywhere, and she's still at this mid-major spot right here. And I get maybe not this offseason, like it kind of happened with Leah Johnson, you know, she signed that extension, but it is also looming in the background. Like one more successful year, two more, like that's just, it's always going to happen.
I still think if you look at the timing of those two extensions, Johnson, it happened about 2.5 months after the season ended. Gillespie signed it 6 days after the last game. I think that speaks
plus
that
like
she wants to be back.
Yeah. Too, it's a lot different signing coaches and stuff. Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, we should just talk about what she's done now.
Exactly.
Though,
so. And hearing her talk through Hoops in the Heartland in the Quad Cities a couple weekends ago and through the NCAA tournament, one of the things that she continued to preach on, and we asked her about this in the interview last week, was she kept using the word belief, how the players believe in the program, the coaches believe in the players, and that's how they were able to create this beautiful run that they went on. And I think that that's one of the most important things about her coaching philosophy and her recruiting philosophy is these players truly believe that coming to Illinois State, they can succeed and they can put together a good team. And we saw that pay off this year, and it was just the coolest thing to see. Yeah. And I am like
the biggest
I'm the biggest ISU women's Redbird or the ISU women's basketball fan in the world right now.
So last week we were just talking about, we were like, is Joey Dwyer back? Like, is he back to be a Joey Dwyer fully committed to Redbird Hoops now?
I'm back.
I think you were back.
Because there was a stretch there for a little while where ISU athletics were kind of losing me. They were losing me a little bit.
Coach Gillespie brought you back.
Coach Gillespie brought me back.
It went into the media department, too, as well. Exactly.
ISU men's basketball, that was a rough season. ISU soccer, that was a little bit of a disappointment. Mm-hmm. We're back. ISU women's basketball. And now we've got baseball and softball. I'm rocking Redbird gear every day now.
Yeah, I feel that.
That is great to hear that we have Joey Dwyer back, especially since we've still been doing a show, and it's good to know. I guess great. Thanks for telling us you weren't on board with that.
It's not that I wasn't, as you do an Illinois State sports show.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, now he knows his exact takes. I feel like before it was like up and down. He was going all over the place with how he viewed things.
Now I'm locked in. Now I'm bringing you nothing but Joe Kennedy trademarked optimism.
That's how you go.
Great. I can't wait for that. But let's move to maybe a team that doesn't have the foundation that the women's basketball team has.
And now you lost me again.
And the men's side, because it was a big week for them with the announcement of Antonio Reeves entering the transfer portal. And let's clear that up real quick. He's just in the portal right now. He hasn't transferred anywhere, so there's still hope. Probably not great hope that he's back, but I think with a new coach coming in, there's still a chance they could win him back if he has a chance to sit down with the new staff, hear what they have to say. Yeah. But I think it's what you have to do in modern college basketball. You have to explore your options.
Especially when a new coach comes in. I mean, last year he explored his options with the NBA. I don't believe he was in the portal at all. And so it's good to, like, take a different look and views at everything. I mean, this year I would be pretty surprised if Antonio Reeves came back just because of how well he did last year. And now he's approaching his senior season. He wants to end his career probably somewhere where he knows he's going to get some good playing time and also have a successful team. And I think he deserves it with the stuff he did this year. I mean, top 25 points per game. He could shoot it, and now he can get to the rack. He would fit perfectly on a team that's looking to make a run in March.
Yeah, he is a very, very good guard who deserves to have some guys around him. And the thing that the men's basketball program does when they give Mueller the boot and they bring in Peden is they are kind of hitting the reset button a little bit. And so while that's great for the program because now you can look and be like, okay, well, we're going to start building towards something, it kind of leaves guys like Antonio Reeves in on the limb a little bit because now you know that your team's not going to be successful for another two years at least. And for Antonio Reeves, a guy who has a lot of professional basketball aspirations, you need to be on that bigger spotlight, and it's not going to get done here.
And I think it works out perfectly. Like, the Redbirds are trying to go into rebuild mode. That's what a good thing about college sports is, like, you can kind of go into a strict rebuild. You fire a coach, other players are going to probably leave through the transfer portal, but when you go to the pros, it can be hard to start a rebuild. And so now that the ISU is officially doing a sort of rebuild type thing, I mean, they got the new coach. Who knows how long it could take? You see coaches come into programs and right away have success. I mean, that'd be very hard to do in the Valley, but I mean, it can happen. Maybe not instant great success, but something better than last year.
And two other players that we haven't mentioned, both Austin Andrews and Abdu Jai have also entered the transfer portal. So it's just kind of the same on a lesser scale, but it's kind of the same thing where these guys who are a little more established on the team. But I mean, they're not quite as important as Antonio Reeves, but they're also trying to explore other options.
It feels like those are the type of guys that might get lost in the shuffle and the coaching change. Jai in his case would be going into his senior year, might just not fit in. Like, the coach might be looking for a younger player. And it's important to know too that the Redbirds did kind of get a gift from Dan Mueller. His last recruiting class, they have twin guards, Takai and Taiwan Simpkins, who are considered to be top 15 recruits in the state of North Carolina. So you have them coming in. Those could be how we've been talking about for a few weeks, how they haven't been able to build around a high school recruit in quite some time. Those could be those recruits for Peden to build around, establish his culture around, and get some other role players for those guys to build off of.
And I wonder what he's going to do also in the transfer portal for ISU and bringing in people, because he could bring in a whole philosophy in the way he approaches and shows and views the ISU program that could get a lot of recruits in. I mean, I remember at Arch Madness, I was talking with analysts from the Missouri Valley Conference Network, and he was just saying he was a guy who came out of St. Louis, wasn't an ISU guy at all, and he's just said, I think Illinois State has one of the best programs in the Valley with tradition, fans, location to Chicago. Yeah. And a lot of that connections can help Peden. And that's something that Dan Mueller did not do with
and
those
connections.
And that's
something Kyle Brennan's emphasized on the show to us before, that he thinks that there's no reason for us not to be contenders. If you look at the resources, look at some of the gyms the other Valley teams play in, and they're not as nice as Redbird Arena. Like, you have a great resource for a mid-major. So I think there's just tons for him to build around, and this could be a sleeping giant type program, and I'm excited to see where it goes in the future. Look at what the women's team's able to do. The men's team is just as capable of doing that. We're going to see how that turns out. But we got lots more hoops coming up on the show tonight. We're going to be talking some NCAA basketball with Matt Cherry. But before we do that, we're hitting some NFL free agency updates. That's next on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
This is Brady Davis from Redbird Football, and you're listening to Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Just like that, the Red Zone's back. Leo Sauter, Joey Dwyer, Joe Kennedy. You heard former Illinois State quarterback Brady Davis talking. We're talking some quarterbacks in the NFL because it's free agency. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the quarterback carousel. There are moves. And let's start with one that I think sent shockwaves throughout the sport. One of the greats, one of the icons, a player that is synonymous with NFL football, player that has won an accolade unlike any other.
What are you talking about?
The Pittsburgh Steelers have found their guy, the former MVP, Mitchell Trubisky, linking up in Pittsburgh, taking on the mantle from Big Ben. What's the stat? The Steelers have had like six head coaches and like four quarterbacks or something ridiculous like that. Mitch is carrying on that legacy.
I mean, okay, so we're going to get into this real quick with Mitch Trubisky. So an exit out of Chicago. I mean, everyone in the media is kind of, especially outside of Chicago media, throwing shade at Mitch, just saying he's never going to make it. Then all of a sudden they're flipping it up and it was all on Matt Nagy now. And so, I think it was just a mixture of both. But now, he's in Pittsburgh.
Right.
And he has one of the best coaches in the league,
like
in Mike Tomlin.
This is a great setup for him because he's with a good coach, kind of a team that can develop talent, like, can play a scheme. Like, he's going to play for a coach that will know how to use his talents. Like, and let's be real.
How they run the ball, too. Yeah. It's going to be I think it'll be a good fit
and
for him.
I think as Bears fans, I think it's safe to say we all root for the guy. Like, there's no ill will. We don't resent him for not panning out. Yeah. Like, it was fun while it happened. Was it great? No, but it's like one of those things where you can just be happy it happened, even though it wasn't what you
That's
thought it was going to be.
Optimism worked out perfect with Mitch Trubisky. I'm like, you know, he's just a good guy. And he's such a nice guy.
Like
within the program, even at the Bills the past couple or last year, everyone was just saying how big of a leader Mitch Trubisky was with Josh Allen, learning under Josh Allen, Sean McDermott up in Buffalo and everything. And then I just think with Pittsburgh, they got a good running attack. Najee Harris improved their offensive line too. They did lose Juju Smith-Schuster. But still got some good weapons on the outside.
And in a draft that's going to be weak on quarterbacks, I think this was the right thing to do. Go with a guy that, worst case scenario, is a replacement level starter. They're probably going to draft a guy in a couple years anyway or sign somebody else next season. Yeah. But at least Mitch has a chance. And that's the way quarterbacking is in the NFL. If you're serviceable, you can make a career. Like, how much money has Chase Daniel made?
Colt McCoy, too.
Like, all these guys. Yeah. They can just float around from team to team, and it's good to see Mitch is still on that. But where do you really want to start with the quarterbacks here? Should we talk about Brady, talk about Rodgers? Where do we want to go here?
I think that it's really important that we acknowledge what you said, is this is a weak quarterback draft class. When you look at the prospects who are coming up, humble brag, measured my hands yesterday. They're a whole inch longer than Kenny Pickett's. I'm more of a prospect than Kenny Pickett is at this point. I hate to say that, but guys, if I don't show up for the show in a couple weeks, it's because I got picked by the Lions.
Yeah.
But I think that's why we've seen all these moves, both the trades and the guys getting all the money. Like, we could start anywhere, but I think that it's most fitting to start with the guy maybe closest to where we are now and probably the one we're going to like the least to talk about, but Raj coming back to the Packers.
And for some context here, the three of us, we were in the state of Wisconsin when that broke, and it was like Christmas meets the 4th of July. They were shooting off cheese-flavored fireworks.
There's like no one in Wisconsin. It's like it's just a bunch of towns with a couple people at each of them.
The eight townies that were there in Tomahawk, Wisconsin were thrilled. It was the six people at the restaurant we were at and then the two people working.
But
that was the whole town population. Yeah.
It felt like that was the move that set off the rest of the dominoes with the free agency, because Rodgers was linked to the Broncos, was rumored to be traded. He signs that, then right away, the Russell Wilson things happen. It felt like it was Rodgers' market to set, and then once he set that, everybody else was then waiting to scramble to get their quarterback.
And the weird thing, too, we're talking about quarterbacks right now, but the wide receiver market was set by Christian Kirk from the Jaguars, who got about $19 million, and that set up Tyreek Hill and Devontae Adams. But a lot of markets were just being set with Rodgers, though. I mean, Blake Hornstein, big fan of the program right here, but he's an honest about the Packers and everything, and big Rodgers guy, but he was just saying, and I agree with, like, how selfish it kind of seems for Rodgers to make $50 million, take away money that could go to wide receivers when he's already getting paid over $30 million a year too as well. I mean, you obviously want to get your money, but how are you expecting to be on a team that he's been saying he wants to compete for the past 3 years, and he hasn't been on a team that's gotten over that hump, and not give the resources that are going to be needed for that team to win? So I think it just doesn't make sense for both teams or both sides.
Especially now that you look at all of the dominoes that have fallen in the Packers wide receiving core. Obviously the biggest one to go was Devontae Adams, but then you lose other guys too, like you lose Marquez Valdes-Scantling. That's another big one. And this is a receiving core that was not great to begin with outside of Devontae Adams. And we were talking about, man, well, who do they have for him to throw to? Alan Lazard and not even Equanimee St. Brown anymore. And Don Lazard and who? Randall Cobb, who's 39 years old?
Jordy Nelson's coming out of retirement.
he is. But, like, you're right. It's kind of mind-blowing to me that Aaron Rodgers would take so much money knowing that his team is not in a position where you can compete.
Exactly.
And when you look at Tom Brady, who's won all of these championships, he is always on team-friendly deals.
Yeah. And he's already heard him, too. Yeah. Za'Darius Smith, who just signed to the Vikings yesterday, and that took away one of their best defenders on the edge on the defensive line. It's already taken an effect. I mean, with Devontae Adams leaving, though, they still have a lot of cap space with inside that spot, I would say. But the draft, they're going to have to go through that and possibly maybe even trade for a Seattle wide receiver like Lockett or DK Metcalf, because those are guys that are on the books, and the Packers are one of those teams that are for sure capable of pulling off that trade.
And then you're talking about the Seahawks too. Russell Wilson getting traded to the Broncos. That was another big one because he was, that was the one that felt like it was least likely to happen. I thought at least where there was all the rumors last season, then it didn't happen. I thought maybe he was safe in Seattle, but then looking at the year they had, it seems like now they're going with a full blow up there. And it's kind of just like, it's a buyer's market for Seahawks players right now. And that could help a lot of teams out there.
And for the Broncos, I feel like for the past 3 years, everyone's just been saying, if they have a quarterback, they could get to the big game.
Do we still have the Drew Lock MVP?
Do
we have
that bump? I mean, I don't know.
No, we won't play it.
I don't know.
I think I cleared it out of there like 2 weeks ago.
Blake Hornstein saying Drew Lock was going to be the MVP of that year. But no.
And that feels like our guy Vic Fangio was kind of set up to fail there. How he was able to get a lot out of that defense, tried with the offense, but he just never had a quarterback. And now... It's the Broncos' race to lose now, I guess, with now they have that quarterback. Now what are they going to do with him? And it'll just be interesting to see how that pans out because Russell Wilson, I feel like, still has some good years left in him for the game he plays.
And Russell Wilson, every time we've seen him have his greatest success, he's complemented by a very good defense. And I think that's what the Broncos have, at least have built under Vic Fangio in Denver, is a very solid defense. I think that Russell Wilson is in a position where he can thrive. He's got a good running back. He's got a couple good weapons. He's got one of the best tight ends in the league. I'm really excited to watch Russ in the Mile High City.
Well, Noah Fant isn't on that team anymore, though.
Oh,
he's going to Seattle in that trade.
Call me out.
They still do got, like, I don't know how the league is going right now with all this speed. They got KJ Hamler, who didn't play much last year, and Jerry Jeudy, two young guys that were known for speed in college. And that could translate. And they also, their running back, Jamonte Williams, he's an animal. And
he's that guy.
And that's what you need. People still forget sometimes that you don't just need a quarterback. You need a team that can run the ball. And that's also a weakness on their point right now is their offensive line, if you're looking at their offense. But with what they're able to do on that offense is sky high.
And let's talk about two other teams that have seemingly always been the quarterback away because they're kind of linked in this. Let's talk about the newly christened Washington Commanders and the Indianapolis Colts. The Commanders traded for Carson Wentz. The Colts traded for Matt Ryan. It feels like both of those teams have a lot of that foundation down there, but then haven't had the right mix at the quarterback. Like, look at the Colts. How many QBs have they had since Peyton Manning? You go through Andrew Luck, Jacoby Brissett, Phil Rivers, and then even Wentz last year, and they're still looking for that right guy, and that's a team that always gets that preseason love, is they're just one piece away. Is Matt Ryan the guy there?
I think so.
I don't. I really don't. You know? I think that, honestly, I don't envy the situation that the Colts find themselves in because they had their guy. For some teams, and we know as Bears fans, sometimes it takes a million years. Andrew Luck.
Oh, yeah.
Andrew Luck was their franchise quarterback. He was supposed to be that guy for 15 years. And then when he retires, it kind of shifts everything you were building towards.
Because you're not going to be bad enough then to tank for that quarterback then because they have good other weapons. So they're just in mediocrity right now.
So, and so they're kind of in that limbo. Bringing in Phillip Rivers was a nice transitional move, right? That was kind of to get them with a serviceable guy who could get them wins and keep them competitive until they found their next piece. And then bringing in Carson Wentz, that should have been the move that was bringing in your next piece. I was never a Carson Wentz guy.
He didn't do that bad. He wouldn't win games, though. He would almost lose games in some games, but then a lot of time he was just playing a nice, solid, all right game. Yeah. But he would never win a game for the team.
Exactly, but that should have been your move. When they brought in Carson Wentz, that should have been the move to go get the guy.
But now
you're going into Matt Ryan, who is just another transitional piece.
But last season, I feel like they went for Wentz because they missed out on Matt Stafford. So, like, there wasn't as much of a quarterback market last year, or there wasn't the right guy out there, and now they're kind of in a similar boat this year. You miss out on the top guys, and then you have to kind of settle for Matt Ryan, who might be past his MVP years.
I think Matt Ryan still has a lot left in his tank. You got to remember how good he was when his team was surrounded with good weapons.
Of course,
and
then, last two years,
Julio Jones was washed. I mean, Calvin Ridley, he did really good 2 years ago. This year, we all know kind of what happened then. Kyle Pitts had successful rookie year, but he didn't have a lot. And he didn't have a lot, especially coming in from the tight end position. Yeah, I think with Indianapolis, especially how good their defense is, too, lined up with the wide receivers that they now got and Pittman, Pascal.
I think you said it. Matt Ryan is good with weapons, but the Colts do not have weapons. Zach Pascal and Pittman are not They are not top 50. He's not a top 50 Pittman wide receiver. If I had the time, I could name you 50 receivers.
No,
I
don't Pittman had a great year last year.
That's a lot of receivers.
Okay, that is a lot of receivers, but he's not a number one guy. He falls in the same category as Hollywood Brown, is these guys who are kind of forced to be number ones because of the lack of talent.
No, Pittman's good.
There's really only one weapon on the Colts worth mentioning, and it's Jonathan Taylor.
No.
Like, I don't see a future where Matt Ryan is super successful carried by the weapons around him, because I don't think any of those guys are that caliber. You don't have any Roddy Whites or Julio Jones is on that
Pittman,
team.
No, man, he's 24, 1,000 receiving yards last year, 6 touchdowns, and he had about 65 receiving yards a game, and that's all with Carson Wentz, as well as when Carson Wentz was out a couple of games last year too with injuries. I mean, Jonathan Taylor, though, what you're saying with Jonathan Taylor, arguably probably the best running back going in the next year. Yep. And I think both of those guys together can work out.
And let's talk about Jonathan Taylor a little bit, because we've seen it with certain running backs around the league. There's only just so much tread on those tires before they break off, so you have to maximize what's left. Like, look at the fall of Todd Gurley. We're seeing it now with McCaffrey, maybe even Saquon a little bit. So you really, if you're the Colts, you have to maximize this year, because you don't know how much you're going to have left in Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah.
If that's your top weapon, you have to go all in. And Matt Ryan could capture a little bit left in the tank there to spark that.
And all the guys you mentioned, too, were all physical running backs, kind of like Jonathan Taylor. I mean, he's versatile, but the way he breaks through runners is unlike anyone else.
But is that sustainable for him career-wise? Probably not. So you have to go all in these next two seasons, probably.
And I really like how this conversation went from us talking about Carson Wentz and Matt Ryan to just talking about Matt Ryan, because I think we're all in agreement about how Washington is going to be no better and no worse with Carson Wentz at the helm than they were with Taylor Heinicke last year.
I kind of liked Heinicke. He wasn't great, but he was entertaining.
You know the Kurt Warner movie, American Underdog, that came out?
I haven't seen it, no.
American Underdog should be about Taylor Heinicke.
I feel like
the same dumb oafy dude who played Kurt Warner. But, like, he can play any white quarterback in the league.
One thing I want to get in real quick is just Deshaun Watson and how he's getting traded to the Browns.
But he might
be suspended for the first couple of games, so the Browns might. I could see the Browns finishing fourth in their division.
Yeah, and 3 hours ago it was announced that he's gonna probably faced criminal charges in Texas. Like, that seems like a move that the Browns were like.
It's a Browns move.
The Browns were like, we're going to trade for this guy, but Baker, don't go anywhere.
And they gave up so much in that trade, too. 3 first-round picks, I believe, in that one. And, I mean, when you trade all that away, you're really giving away your future. You're going all in on a guy who has criminal charges on him right now and hasn't played a game in almost 2 years. So that's a scary look if you're a Browns fan.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there, and it still feels like the Browns have a lot of other problems before that even, and they put all their eggs in the quarterback basket, mm-hmm. which we've seen them do before, and Browns might just pull a Browns here, I think.
Maybe.
Wonder where Baker's going.
Watson
go.
And Baker, they're going to do quarterback by committee.
I mean, by now, they might have to keep Baker.
That's what I'm saying. Like if you're the Browns management seeing that, you can't let Baker go.
No.
But if you're Baker, why would you want to stay for that? Like, I mean, he might not have a choice, but like, what does that say to him?
Yeah.
Like,
he could retire, but other than that, like, he's not really in a position.
Retire for a year.
He might just have to play so well that he spites them. Just put up an MVP year out of spite.
And then leave.
Yeah, that would be great, too.
Have fun with Deshaun.
Yeah.
And that's all we have for this NFL segment. When we come back, we're taking things back to the hardwood. We're talking hoops, so don't you go a-changing. This is the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Hey, this is Dickie V, baby, and you're listening to the Red Zone, baby, only on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone. Leo Stoddard, Joey Dwyer, Joe Kennedy, and now we welcome from Naperville, Illinois, Mr. Matt Cherry to the show, and he's talking some college hoops. Matt, how excited have you been this past week with the NCAA tournament going, and how's your bracket looking?
Excited, not at all. Not after the first week.
Yeah.
Bracket completely busted. I don't think I'm alone in saying that.
No, I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, it's been a rough few weeks, or week, I'd say. Yeah. But it's... And my picks for today are very pessimistic, because I know that they're going to probably come out to be wrong.
It's the worst part of March Madness when you get to the second weekend of games and you start fading your own picks.
They're all close games, too, and you can always – either way, it could go both sides, because, I mean, these are all the best teams that are out there competing right now, and it's just – it could go either way. And that's the hardest part about March Madness. That's why there's never nowhere close to a perfect bracket, because it's just the hardest thing to predict ever.
Yeah, it truly is madness. It is madness here in March. Yeah.
Brilliantly put there, Joey. And let's start here, because throughout the round of 64, the round of 32, there were some great upsets. There were some great teams. I've personally enjoyed watching St. Peter's the most. The Peacocks, they were one of my teams in 3-up, 3-down that I jokingly picked, not thinking they were a real school. And now it's been fun getting to learn a little bit more about them. But has there been a particular matchup that has been your favorite? I thought that UNC-Baylor game was probably my most exciting one so far in the tournament.
Yeah, that one was awesome. As a blue-blooded Tar Heel fan myself.
Okay.
That was a fun game to watch. Some of the games that really hurt me,
Let's take it in that direction. Yeah, your favorite games. The games
that really hurt your heart. Michigan upsetting Tennessee. That one really, really hurt. Auburn got beat, that one hurt a lot. When Kentucky got beat, that one hurt a lot.
This is just for your bracket. I mean,
yeah,
for
this
me,
is,
when I saw Kentucky
for my bracket,
lose,
yeah.
I was so happy. I just love the madness and craziness. Yeah. Especially, I love looking at people's faces and saying, just wow, their bracket was screwed up, because that's literally everyone, and everyone's going through that. So it's kind of funny and everyone thinks like their bracket's the best. They're like, oh, my bracket's like, I got two wrong this today, and like tomorrow you're probably gonna have eight wrongs.
So the game that hurt the worst was when we were driving back from Iowa City from the Women's March Madness.
Which one was that?
It was Illinois beating Chattanooga, because Joe Kennedy, the man sitting right across from me, is the world's biggest Fighting Illini fan, and so I revel when they lose, because I like Illini fans and Iowa Hawkeye fans are the same people. Like, they're the same type of people.
Especially with basketball. They've had good teams,
so,
but they're just...
For both of those teams to lose in the first round would have been a thing of beauty. And, I mean, the Illini dropped the ball against Houston. So
hey, Illini still
okay,
went further than those Hawkeyes.
Yeah, they did.
Hawkeyes went down in the first round to Richmond, a team that wasn't even going to make the tournament unless they won their conference tournament. So.
Hey, let's go Spiders.
Yeah.
Let's get a little go Spiders in the chat.
What about you, Matt? Did you have a game you saw last weekend that kind of brought an eye out for you, or...
Well, in particular, the St. Peter's-Kentucky game.
Yeah.
Obviously, I had Kentucky going farther than St. Peter's, but wow, that was a great game. And they won their second game. They're playing Purdue, I think, tomorrow?
Or? Tomorrow, yeah.
And at the rate St. Peter's has been playing, I think that they could be a real good contender for Purdue. I hope they're not, because I have Purdue going really far. So we'll see what happens with that. But like you were saying earlier, Joe, about... Or you were saying, Joey, about like that team that you just want to lose, in this case, Illinois. I think we all have those teams that we don't want to see go far. For me, it's Ohio State. We got a buddy that goes there.
Okay.
He's a huge Buckeyes fan, and he always likes to shove it down. The fact that Justin Fields is in the NFL, and I don't appreciate that, so I'm happy to see them going out.
Hey, do you shout back to him? We got James Robinson in the NFL. I mean, James has done more than Justin. That's all I got to say for
they're,
that.
They're tunnel vision with those facts.
But I agree. There's a lot of hate out there for Ohio State. One of my biggest games I saw last weekend was in the second round, Kansas against Creighton. This game, it was crazy. It was going back and forth pretty much throughout the whole thing. Creighton was making it interesting. Kansas finally pulled away. But Kansas, they're playing, like, I think one of the best teams in the nation right now. Arguably them, Gonzaga. Gonzaga's also had some miscues, though, first two games. They were pretty close until the ending, I would say, for the Zags. They eventually pulled away. But for Kansas, Remy Martin, who transferred in as probably the highest touted transfer this year, is finally playing good basketball, and what a perfect time to do that. Because coming in this year, if they were projected to be top one or two team, and kind of fell off because Remy Martin wasn't doing his thing, but Martin went off for 20 points in that last game against Creighton, pulled away a couple of big shots too at the end, and it's gonna come down to him for Kansas, and they're probably one of my favorite teams so far this
year. And just looking at the region Kansas has, looking at the teams that are left, they kind of have an easy path to the championship. It's almost like it's their region to lose here. They're really one of the only traditional favorites left. And yeah, I don't know if there's an upset in there with Iowa State and Miami. Those are two fun teams, but
those are two teams that are like, hey, look at us, we're here.
Yeah,
right now.
But they don't meet the weight.
Maybe
with Kansas,
Miami, but Iowa State, there's no way they projected, especially their fans. I have a couple buddies who go there, and they're literally just like, we're just happy we're here right now. We have no expectations at all, because they did not really do a lot to get into the tournament. They were one of the last teams to get in. But yeah, Leo, that side of the bracket.
Because, I mean, looking at...
And Providence, too, is a team that a lot of people looked at as a lucky team, but they've still won games, and then they've won games pretty convincingly so far in this tournament, beating teams by over 10 points in the first two.
If you look at the East, you see Purdue has to still go through UCLA or North Carolina. Those are in St. Peter's. That's right.
Come on.
But like, that's a tougher road to that. And Kansas doesn't have, seem to have as many roadblocks in their way. I think the pressure's on them now where they have the easiest path. So if they mess it up, it's going to look even more embarrassing for
them. I definitely think the hardest region right now to come out of is going to be the West, though, because it's been chalk up to this point. And I'm not a huge believer in what the Razorbacks are doing at Arkansas, but the other three teams are all very, very solid. You've got Gonzaga, Texas Tech, and Duke. And I think those are all teams that feasibly could come out and...
In Arkansas.
And that's even easily. Arkansas. But, like, even if you look at who has played in that region so far, like Memphis was a tough, tough pull for Gonzaga in the second round. And then you've got Notre Dame, who had a little bit of flash here and there, and they gave Texas Tech a run. And then the only game that really, in the round of 34, or the round of 32, that wasn't much of a struggle was Duke and Michigan State. Mm-hmm. And even that one was close for a tiny bit.
One thing I want to go over from like last weekend still, too, is just the Arizona TCU and Arizona, especially with Arizona's matchup coming up against Houston this weekend. I mean, I don't know if you guys were watching this game. I actually fell asleep watching this game because I was up late on Saturday night hanging out with some friends and everything, and I was just tired. I went to bed literally at like 8:30 watching this game, and I woke up and I just turned on my phone and I was like, no way, I just missed this game. But it was a crazy one.
Are you talking about Illinois-Houston or
TCU Arizona Sunday night? It was the last game of the first weekend, and Benedict Mathurin and Coloco of Arizona, those two together put up 58 points out of the 85. And I don't know, did you guys see Benedict Mathurin's dunk over the TCU guy?
Yes.
I saw that clip.
He got up, his head almost touched the top of the, like the ceiling almost, it seemed like. But Arizona, they struggled in that game against a TCU team, and Houston is going to give them problems, I think, and that's going to be a game to keep an eye out for tonight.
Absolutely. I think... talking about that side of the region, that's another tough one. We got Michigan and Villanova going on right now. I want to circle real quick back to the West region, because I don't know where you guys are on Duke, where you are on Coach K, but that's a team that I just want to see. I want to see their parade rained on. I don't want to see Coach K get one final championship. I just want to see him get the most unceremonious send-off. Like, I hope they lose by like 40 points or something in their next game.
I don't know if we talked about this on the Red Zone. We might have had a break or anything, but Duke losing to North Carolina, Coach K's last home game.
Oh, yeah. We haven't had a show since then.
Good for Coach K. I mean, he's done a lot for the program. I mean, we could all, like, hate on him.
He's a weasel.
Chicago guy, I believe so.
Fake Chicago. He's from the suburbs,
fake
I think.
Chicago,
he's from
the
suburbs.
Yeah. Chicago.
But, I mean, still,
shout out to Naperville for chiming in.
But, I mean, it's good for him that he didn't lose in the first two rounds, because if they would have lost in the round of 64 or 32, that would have been, I don't know.
That would have awesome.
Happened.
That would have
been great. And maybe he would have came back for another year.
At the rate Texas is playing, though, they're going to put Coach K out of a job, hopefully.
Yeah.
I would love to see that.
I agree. Texas texting me.
No, I think the NCAA is going to do everything in their power to get Duke at least into the
You know game. It was rigged for them to get that Duke-Michigan State matchup, too.
Oh, my God.
In this past round.
But, I mean... It's the whole Coach K thing is, I'm not a big Coach K fan personally. Andrew Evola.
Andrew Evola is a Duke and a Michigan fan. So yeah, that's what we got
red
going.
Red flag.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, Coach K, take him or leave him. I don't really care. Coach K is tired. The St. Peter's Peacocks wired.
Yeah, exactly. And St. Peter's, it's no fluke what they did. They beat Kentucky, and then after that, they go and convincingly beat Murray State. It's like, I mean, it is still kind of crazy to think about, but they go on and win against another very good team in Murray State by a good amount, and now they're coming up against Purdue, and it's like, all right, there's no way they can do it. They can't handle Zach Edey's height and size advantage, but it's March, baby. And Leo, as I always say,
you never know. And I just, like, I love when we get one of these teams every year because you never expect it. Oral Roberts last year, I think my all-time favorite, like, surprise team was that 2013 Florida Gulf Coast team. Yeah. Those guys were awesome. St. Pete's is quickly working their way up for me. Like I said, the Peacock mascot, that is awesome. Their court, I don't know if you've seen it. It's like a high school gym, so that makes it even cooler, I think.
Leo, what seats more, St. Peter's gym or Brother Ice's gym?
Probably St. Peter's. By a tad.
Because
we didn't have bleachers on both sides of Brother Ice, but if we did, we would have. But I love that. That's what I love most about March, is finding these made-up schools, these auto-generated schools that quickly become all over the culture. And it's cool now with the NIL, seeing that these St. Peter's guys are able to profit off of that, that they're signing deals with Buffalo Wild Wings and stuff like that, because in the past they wouldn't be able to do that because there's probably not a pro player on that roster. But right now they're on top of the world, and it's cool to see these players get to cash in on that.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And, like, going from an area with players – I mean, are expected to go to the NBA in Auburn. Auburn just lost to Miami, who is a team that kind of snuck in as a 10th seed coming into this one. And it's interesting, at least one power conference team seeded 9th or worse has reached the Sweet 16 in every tournament since 2008. And this year there's three, with Miami at 10, Iowa State at 11, and Michigan at 11. And all three of those teams are still there. In Miami and Iowa State are going to be playing each other. But Miami has some guys. This team has beaten Duke. They've taken down people a couple of past couple of games down the tournament. Isaiah Long from Illinois won, I believe, Illinois Basketball Player of the Year one year, a couple of years ago, a long time ago, and he's like a fifth-year guy. They got the veterans on the team that can take down Iowa State, and they cause problems. They've caused problems to Duke now, too, so it'll be a fun one to watch with that.
Can't wait to watch that one, and we hope you like this basketball talk because we're bringing back more hoops. More hoops. We're rounding out the show with even more March Madness talk. That's next on the Red Zone on 103.3 WZN.
This is Keyshawn Evans from Illinois State Men's Basketball, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZMB.
You heard Keyshawn Evans, good friend of the show, well, former friend of the show, I guess. Not really our friend, but friend of the past owners of the show, or the past hosts of the show. Going off the rails here. But Leo Stauder, Joey Dwyer, Joe Kenny, and Matt Cherry, we're talking more NCAA March Madness because we have the Sweet 16 this weekend, and there are some great matchups here, so we're going to dive into those a little bit.
Yeah, and so right now what we got going on, Gonzaga, Arkansas, already 3 minutes left in the first half, Zags up 27-26, and this is an interesting game where Arkansas, they have that versatile defense with Jalen Williams and then J.D. Notae, two scorers that have already combined for 11 points for this for the Hogs of Arkansas, but Drew Timmy and Chet Holmgren, I think we need to talk a little about. Chet Holmgren is just a player no one has ever seen and compared to anyone like Chet Holmgren before.
I just love that we have a college-aged dude in the year of our Lord 2022 named Chet. Like, that is a throwback name. That's a guy that comes to fix your old
Chet
two-backed TV in, like, the 70s or something.
Yeah.
Not putting up, like, 20 points in a March Madness game. And I just love him for the name. Like,
it
don't know much else about
too,
him.
Because
yeah.
You don't see a Chet ever, and you never see a guy like who Chet Holmgren is ever. So, I mean, those both two work together. But I think the key for Gonzaga is just Drew Timmy and the Timmy Monster and what he does. I mean, he's got that nasty mustache going back again like he had last
year.
It
helps him play.
It definitely does help him play.
It elevates his playing.
And I love the way he does interviews. This guy swears a lot. And so on his interviews, it's like him trying to do an interview, and he's about to swear, but then he's like, well, then he tries to find another word, and it takes a couple seconds.
That's what you're like on the show.
Yeah, I mean, every time I say anything, I'm just thinking of a different word, I guess.
Gonzaga is one of the teams to me right now. We mentioned it, that there's not really a team this year that is a head and shoulders above the rest, right? It's kind
Kansas.
Of it's a,
well, Gonzaga.
Rock Chalk.
No, Gonzaga.
Rock Chalk Jayhawks. But Gonzaga's really looked human through the first two games. That Georgia State game, they had to go through a little bit of a scare in the first half, and then Memphis hung in there the entire time. And so now that they're playing Arkansas, and then even if they win Arkansas, they've got either Texas Tech or Duke, two very good teams. I don't know if we see Gonzaga in the Final Four.
And Texas Tech is a team that intrigues me because we talk about a lot in the pro sports that the team that ends up losing the championship, they normally have a quicker fall from grace than the team that wins it. We saw Texas Tech back in 2019 lose in the NCAA championship. And they've still kind of been able to hang around in there. That it seems like that boosted their program, even though they didn't get the ring, that they're still there. And they're a team that I think could really mess some things up this in this upcoming matchups.
I just wanted to point out, as hard as the West is, let's say Gonzaga does lose, it would be fair to point out that they'll definitely be back. I mean, Joey, you mentioned Chet Holmgren. This kid's 19 years old, and he's already breaking records in the NCAAs, unlike a player we've ever seen in the last couple decades. And as hard as the schedule is, it is now for the West, even if Gonzaga does lose, we'll see them again next year.
I mean, that's just how it always goes to Gonzaga. They haven't won a national championship. Mark Few's been there for over 25 years, I believe, now, and they've never gotten there. They've been, since about 2008, they've gone from, they are a mid-major team, and no one looks at them like that, but every year, it's kind of funny, we look at the ISU mid-major polls in the media packets. Every time
Gonzaga's
I always look at Gonzaga,
there,
every time is at number one because no one can keep up with them, especially Power 5 teams. But with the Zags and with teams that win it, it's kind of interesting. This is now the 14th straight year a team that will not win it back-to-back as Baylor lost last week. And it's also since Florida won it in 2007, it's like every team that wins it the year next, it's been the second-round exit, first-round exit, second-round, second-round, second-round. So, I mean, when you win a national championship, it seems like the next year you ain't having any success.
It's a little bit of that championship hangover.
So maybe Gonzaga doesn't want to win it because then they won't have a good year the next year. So maybe that's their philosophy behind it.
And when you look at the West, it's the most chalk region. It's 1, 2, 3, 4 of the seeds. Let's move to the least
chalk.
But
now it's not chalk, though. Like, it was chalk going up to here, but like now, like Arkansas is giving them a fair fight at the moment. Almost at halftime, Arkansas is down one. And Duke and Texas Tech are both two teams that I think can put up points against any of them.
Yeah, it's so that one is a toss up, anybody's guess.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the East because the East is definitely the most fun.
Yeah.
With North Carolina and UCLA and then Purdue and St. Peter's. We've already talked a bunch about St. Peter's, but this North Carolina UCLA matchup might be the game I'm looking forward to most in the entire Sweet 16.
Yeah, and I think UCLA is another interesting team because they lost some of their key players from last year's team and still found a way to make it back. And it seems like Mick Cronin has them on the right way in the Pac-12. And they're a team that I think it's hard to just go against UCLA in the tournament, especially after we saw what they were capable of last year.
And they've had some injury issues, especially right now. Jaime Jaquez, health is an uncertainty at this point, Mick Cronin was saying. And he was saying that they have two game plans that are ready for tomorrow's game against UNC. Yeah. But, man, UNC was doing against Baylor, Brady Manek, I mean, before he got ejected out of the game, he had over 25 points, Leaky Black, Armando Bacot, he didn't even have, coming into this tournament, he was their guy, and then they got RJ Love now, they're finally getting this production, it's kind of like a Michigan team, it's kind of like a Memphis team that eventually lost. When it comes to March, like, you're probably going to play your best ball, and that's what I believe UNC is doing right now since that time they beat Duke at Duke.
And Jaquez did practice today for UCLA, so it's a pretty good sign for the Bruins that he may play tomorrow. But regardless, that's going to be a great game. That's just going to be maybe the most fun to watch. Either that one or going to the Midwest, Iowa State and Florida is going to be
Miami, Florida
is going to be incredible. I'm so excited for that one.
And that almost feels like one of those games where both teams are just playing their hardest and almost probably know what's coming next. They're probably going to get crushed by Kansas, but as long as you're not the ones that lose before that, it's fun just to be in that competition. They're just going to beat up on each other and then just ultimately have an unceremonious end against Kansas.
That was very presumptive to think that Kansas is going to take care of Providence.
I don't believe in Providence.
And the teams we're talking about right now, all of them, besides for Miami and St. Peter's, all of them have been to a Final Four. And so these are all programs that have been there. They've been in this situation. They've kind of, maybe not recently, especially for some teams, maybe not recently they've had this success, but they've all had this set boundary or set lines of inside their program, no matter how far it goes back, that they are winners and they can get to the big stage. And who knows, maybe Miami can finally get over that hump. And maybe the Peacocks of St. Peter's can continue to make history because no 15 seed has made it to the Elite Eight, and maybe we got a chance now. I mean, come on.
I mean, maybe.
Come on, Peacocks. We're going for them.
Okay, so last region we haven't talked about in the Sweet 16, it's Arizona-Houston and Michigan-Villanova, which is going on right now in the South. A couple matchups where they're not quite as fun.
I think they're great.
I think this
is the best matchup side.
I love watching Michigan's team play, so I think
Joey's
getting ratioed here.
I am getting ratioed because I think Michigan are frauds. I seriously think
I thought so too, and I think the whole entire country, I was beyond upset that they got in the first place, and then they didn't even get a playing game over Rutgers, who was above them by a lot in the standings. Didn't make sense, but now looking at it, it's just like, I look back to the past years and you're just like, wow, they just have success every year when it comes to March. And now, like I've been saying for a couple of these teams, they're playing their best ball and their talent is finally playing there. Diabate from Michigan's finally playing like a top 15 type of recruit he came in to be. And all the stuff they've gone through with Juwan Howard being suspended, I thought he should have been suspended the whole entire year.
Yeah.
But I mean, that didn't happen and everything. Michigan deserves to be there, but Villanova's no joke.
And I also think Houston, seeing the way they handled the Fighting Illini last weekend, showed a lot about the compete that team has. I wouldn't count them out because they've been kind of fun to watch as well. But let's go back to the Big Ten here real quick because we see two teams left here, Michigan and Purdue.
two very different teams with in terms of hype in the preseason. Purdue was ranked number one at the start of the year. It seems like people kind of forgot about them, especially in the meat and potatoes of the Big Ten schedule, but then they're still here. That's impressive.
Yeah.
Michigan surprised a lot of people, but the Big Ten really didn't have as strong a showing as they were expecting to early on in these rounds.
And this brings us back to the three up, three down, the segment we played all season. Yeah. Long for college basketball, we picked all these college games, mm-hmm. and I won convincingly. I want everybody to remember that.
Know.
But the game,
we don't need to go over
I did not pick a Big Ten game correct this year, which it just shows you how weird these Big Ten teams are, because it doesn't matter how good your team is, any one of these teams can lose or win on any given night, and it's the lack of consistency that makes them so hard to predict once we get into March. Like Joe said, Michigan probably doesn't deserve to be in the tournament based on their season.
They're the least deserving team to ever be put in an at-large bid, probably in the entire time they've included the play-in games.
And
just from a resume standpoint.
And they're in the Sweet 16 playing Villanova right now, down what, 4 points, Joe? 5 points?
Yeah.
Halfway through the first half, they have come out and shocked everybody. So the Big Ten really gets under my skin. I'll tell
you.
And
with the Big Ten, a lot of people give it hate, saying they never have success. But the Big Ten finally last year saw its run of 12 consecutive tournaments with multiple teams in the Sweet 16 snapped last year. And now, I mean, it just shows how good it does get to. I mean, maybe they don't have the winners like other conferences. They haven't won it in the Big Ten since 2000 with Michigan State. But another interesting conference is the ACC, who out of nowhere has three teams in the Sweet 16 with Duke, who we could all probably expect that they were probably going to get there. But then North Carolina and Miami.
It was rigged.
Not on their own skill and merit.
No,
it wasn't rigged. The NCAA
wanted
them to be there.
They had some tough matchups. Okay. Like going up against either Michigan State or Davidson, that was always going to be hard.
Right.
But it is kind of interesting to see
against the Peacocks,
North Carolina
they wouldn't
and Miami
be here.
Got in there. Yeah.
But I think that's interesting, too, that we see two traditional blue bloods after the blue, well, three, I guess, with Kansas too, especially after last season where it wasn't a good year for them, where we were talking about, are they all down and out? Can they not hang with the modern transfer portal basketball? But now it seems like they've all kind of rebounded and are able to hang in the tournament. Mm-hmm. It was a COVID year. A lot of weird stuff happened last year. And now, for better or for worse, Duke's back, UNC's back, and Kansas is back right here in the Sweet 16, where they've kind of always been.
Yeah, for sure.
So we've only got a couple minutes left. And I want to know where everybody sits on their final four.
Yeah, I was about to ask that question.
I want to know who everybody has coming out of each region, because we're getting down to the wire here. And
so
I brought the word out of retirement, gentlemen. March is electric.
Yeah. Are we going with the final four as we predicted at the start of the tournament? Because I still have three of the four left.
So sick, guys.
Instead,
just go with what we see in front of us, because maybe some of us only have one team left in the final four. Okay. So I know I just disparaged them and said they haven't been playing that well, but Gonzaga's coming out of the West.
That's gonna be
honestly, it's tough. I want to go Houston out of the South. I think if they can beat Arizona, they'll take care of business against Nova. It just depends on if they can get over the hump and beat the Wildcats. In the Midwest, Rock Chalk Jayhawk all the way. We're going with the beautiful Kansas Jayhawks. And then give me the Tar Heels. Give me the Tar Heels out of the East. Give me the 8 seed to the Final Four.
Okay, I do like that. I mean, go a little diverse with the picks there. Maybe not all straight, I guess, liners right into the picks.
Yeah. So I'll go for mine with the West. I still had it. I have Gonzaga. I believe in them, at least to make it to the Final Four here. The South, I have – this was the only one that I had wrong. I had Tennessee. Don't really know why I did that, honestly. But
they were good. I'll give credit for that.
You know what it was? It was when I heard Dan Mueller on 670 to score. He was talking up Tennessee a lot, and I might have put a little bit behind that. But I guess I was wrong on that one. But so I'll go with Villanova there. Then in the East – we're riding with UCLA there still. And then Kansas, my champion, is still left here in the Midwest. I know it's chalk picking a one seed to win the title, but that's what I did at the start of my bracket. And we're still here, so let's ride with them.
Matt Cherry, what do you got?
Well, first off, Providence has been destroying their competition, so I've got them coming out.
Oh!
I'll take Providence.
And I love that pick. Just because of adversity, Providence. Everyone's doubting. I don't know why either. They win games.
I don't know.
Yeah, I like
and
that.
And then pick. Obviously I got the easy Gonzaga pick up there. And then I've got For the sake of being a contrarian, I got Michigan.
All right.
Yep. Okay. Oh, okay. Well, I was saying like anyone could come out of there.
And then I got Purdue because I'm a Boilermaker at heart.
Okay. Oh, that's okay. Good one. That's a good one. And Mr. Kennedy, how are
you? So I got the Zags coming out as I did
before. That's a clean sweep for the Zags.
Yeah, Zags coming out, even though, I mean, they could very well lose the game going on right now. It's at halftime, I believe. But then after that, I got Purdue going in, beating UCLA, and then I got Houston coming in, and then Kansas, and then at the national championship, I got Gonzaga over Kansas. Three of my four Final Fours were my originals, and my national championship was Gonzaga, Kansas, still is, so I'm going there. Gonzaga win it all.
You guys are so sick. Everybody listening is so proud of you that your brackets have done
so well.
What are
your finals? What's your bracket looking like?
I don't want to hear it.
What's your final pick? Who's going to win it all? Are we all going Gonzaga?
Give me the Tar Heels.
Oh, wow.
Well, let's go with the Peacocks here. But you hear the music playing. Our neighbors are banging the broom on the ceiling. They're kicking us out. They're telling us to keep the noise on. There it is, Joey. But that's all we have for this week's Red Zone. It was a hoops-heavy show here. We talked some ISU men's and women's. We talked some NCAA. Thanks to Matt Cherry for bringing some insight on. We talked some NFL quarterback madness. And the Red Zone is back. We have a few shows left. We're finishing strong. We're really going to try to bring you some great guests, some great insight, finish great here. And don't forget, this weekend we have three broadcasts on WZNY. We have baseball Friday and Saturday, softball on Sunday, weather permitting. I hope those all happen. It's a mess to try to schedule all these games, but that's all we got for the Red Zone. For Joe Kennedy, Joey Dwyer, Matt Cherry, I'm Leo Stodher. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week at 6 o'clock.